Start the recording, and here we go. So, welcome everyone. We're really glad that you're here tonight.
It's wonderful to bring our community together again, and it feels like such an important moment in which to talk about love and how to keep love strong and how to get love back when it's being weakened. Oftentimes, by things that we are unintentionally doing, we want to keep love strong, but sometimes we aren't doing what we need to be doing to make that happen. And so we're excited to talk to you about this tonight.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen us before, I don't know a lot about us. I'm Michelle.
And I'm Ruth.
And we've been together for 10 and a half years now.
And we are the co-founders of Conscious Girlfriend, which is all about helping lesbians and queer women date wisely and love well. And we bring our backgrounds and our passion and our hearts to all of this work. And part of the background that we bring is I have a PhD in transpersonal psychology, and I do a lot of different kinds of healing work, including shamanic work.
And I have a PhD in neuroscience and also a very long Buddhist practice, more than 25 years.
So we always say that our work in Conscious Girlfriend combines science, psychology, and spirit. And one of the things that we're really proud of and that's really important to us is that the concepts and the interventions that we share with you all, with our wonderful, beautiful community of lesbians and queer women, are all evidence-based. So it's not kind of like, you know, well, we tried this and it helped us. Right. Although, I mean, that, you know, that has validity too. I mean, anecdotal evidence and stories from our own lives are incredibly important. But what we are really sharing with you goes way beyond that. And it is researched. It is tested. It is, you know, proven to whatever extent these things can be proven by relationship researchers and brain scans. So we really like to say that up front, because I think many of us, unfortunately, many people in our culture and world of all sexual orientations and genders are kind of groping around in the dark when it comes to trying to have healthy, happy relationships. I mean, most of us didn't grow up seeing that kind of relationship. I know I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't either. And we don't get it in high school or junior high when we should get it, like we got, you know, driver's ed.
Right. And we don't necessarily see it around us. We certainly don't see it in the media. You know, so it's like, how are we supposed to know this stuff? You know, it's not rocket science, but it is, there are sets of skills that that need to be learned, and unfortunately often sets of habits that need to be unlearned.
And so those
of you that are here tonight, we always like to say this with all of our classes, it's like you are pioneers. You know, you are brave and visionary, and every time we do a class, we hope that you will, you know, take this and not only put it to use in your own life, but also spread the word, because as a community and as a world, we need healthier love right now.
Yes, really, really bad. Yeah. And so wherever you are on your relationship journey, this teleclass right now is for you. If you're early dating or you're just beginning your relationship and you want to, you know, make sure that it stays strong, this is great. These are great tools to know. If you've been together for a while and you notice that, you know, you're not quite as connected as you used to be, these are great tools to learn.
And even if your relationship is kind of hanging by a thread right now and you're not sure you should be together at all, you know, I'm really glad that you are here tonight, because these are life support interventions for sure.
Yeah. And even if you're single and you just want to know this information for your next relationship, that's great. It's really
absolutely great. Absolutely. Yeah. It is fantastic to be proactive and work on learning these skills when you're not in a relationship. So this class tonight is definitely for all lesbians and queer women, wherever you are in your relationship journey. We want to help you learn how to build trust and connection and closeness and dismantle the habits that might be destroying those things in your connection. And as always, we will give you as much as we can tonight in this teleclass. We will talk for the usual, I don't know, 45 minutes or so, and then open it up to question and answer. And we will also tell you other ways to go deeper with these tools, because the truth is that just hearing about these kinds of things, you know, taking it in with your cognitive brain is not usually enough to change your life. There usually also needs to be a stage of practice and more practice and more practice and, you know, really taking it in to your own specific situation. And so for people who want some support in doing that, we will be telling you about a low-cost, self-paced course, which Michelle has just put the finishing touches on. It's been another one of her project babies, and we're excited to share that with you tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. So we should tell you a little bit about our relationship pasts and the kinds of things that we went through, because although we do have the backgrounds we have, the academic and knowledge backgrounds we have, a lot of our passion, our impetus for doing this work and for doing this work for our community comes from our own experiences. And you may have heard from me that I spent 9 years in an abusive relationship. And I would say that it was 8 years too long. And one of the hallmarks of that relationship was two really big intimacy killing behaviors. My partner would constantly criticize me. I mean, I remember one day I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to count how many times she says a critical thing. And after 50 in one day, I was like, okay, I'm not going to count anymore. My piece of it was that I didn't know how I was feeling, and I got really shut down when I got scared, and I didn't talk. And from her perspective, that really was sort of like what's often called stonewalling, because I didn't say anything, I couldn't say anything, I couldn't actually speak or communicate, and so it never led anywhere. There's no way to communicate with me, and I couldn't communicate with her.
And the interesting thing is, I think you've probably found in your own lives that you often get together with sort of the same type of person and repeat the same patterns over and over and over again. And, you know, between Michelle and I, there are definitely echoes of the same patterns that each of us had in previous relationships. The difference is that we are so much more aware of what happens when it happens and how to do it differently so it doesn't become a negative spiral. But in some of my past relationships, I remember being on the other side of the fence from what Michelle was describing. I had several partners that would tend to kind of withdraw or pull back from me a little bit. And sometimes I can see now with hindsight that it was just, you know, about other stuff that was going on. But I took it personally. I felt very hurt by it. And I remember once when I was driving cross country with a woman I was madly in love with, and we stopped and visited her family for a few days. And then afterward, when we resumed our trip, she was being really quiet. And I was saying to her, like, well, you know, what's going on? What are you thinking? You know, communicate with me. And the more that I kind of pulled at her, the more she withdrew. And then at a certain point, I got really mad, and I felt like, you know, I don't deserve to be treated like this. And I started really telling her what she was doing wrong. And you can guess how effective that was in bringing her close to me again, right? Like, that did not work. And so we ended up spending the rest of the trip, which was several days, you know, cooped up in a car, driving, you know, hundreds of miles each day, like not talking to each other. And that was one of the most painful experiences of my relationship life. And for a long time, I kind of blamed her for it. You know, I felt like she was the one that didn't have the skills. And once we, once I really dove in and started learning more and committed myself to not repeating that relationship pattern, I realized how crucial a role I played in setting that up and perpetuating it. And we're going to talk more about how in a little while. But I think for me, the really liberating move has been to realize that, you know, whatever happened in my relationships, I was the common denominator. And whatever has happened in your relationships over and over, you know, the same thing is true. And for some of us, it's easy to just look at the part that we've played. Like that's what right. Michelle tends to mm-hmm. do. She tends to blame herself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, so for some of you, if you tend to blame yourself over and over, there's a bigger picture you need to see. Mm-hmm. But for some of us, we tend to blame the other person over and over. And if you're one of them, then you're like me, you're in my camp. And there's a much bigger picture that we need to see too. And it's so empowering once you can see it.
And I think that's the thing. That's the power of these skills, is that they really are, they really put the quality, the happiness, the destiny of our relationship in our own hands. We have so much power to change how we relate to our partner, and that will change how our relationship goes.
And so part of what we want to talk to you about tonight is what's called intimacy killers. We call them intimacy killers anyway. There's a relationship researcher named John Gottman, who some of you have heard of or heard us talk about before, who does thousands of hours of videotaping of couples interacting. And he videotapes couples of all sexual orientations, more straight, but he has done some lesbian and gay couples as mm-hmm. well. And he has gotten to the point where he can predict by watching about 1 minute of videotape which couples are going to be together at a certain point in the future and which are not, which is pretty stunning, mm-hmm. right? And the way that he predicts that is by seeing which couples are doing what he calls the four horsemen of the relationship apocalypse. It's what we call the intimacy killing behaviors. And the sad truth is most of us are doing some of these. It's just the more of them we do, the faster the apocalypse comes.
Right.
And the good news is that we don't have to do any of them.
Right. Exactly.
Most of the time, it's just bad habits. It might be things that we saw our parents doing or have seen other people around us do, or things
or on
they
television.
Did, right. Or things our parents did to us, or our siblings did to us, or whatever other partners have done to us. And so a big part of tonight's message is about, you know, breaking the cycle. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the way things have always been done is very often not the right way to do it. Mm-hmm. And if you're here tonight, it's probably because you already know that deep in your heart. You know that some of what you've been doing hasn't worked as well as you wanted.
Right.
And so we're here to talk more specifically, kind of more granularly about why that is, and then what to do instead.
So the first intimacy killer, which is the one that I think is probably the most common, and in fact, it's the one that when couples who've broken up, when they're asked, what happened, the most common answer is they felt criticized. So criticism is the most common, and it's very common, and it's easy, it's easy for us to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And very often I know I criticize because I feel frustrated about something. And like I said, I'm not proud of this, but my first impulse when I feel frustrated is to kind of look outside mm-hmm. of myself to find someone or some other thing that's to blame. And, often this beautiful person who's the closest to me, it's like my mind goes to this place of blaming her. Mm. And so, something's wrong. Let's say, we forgot something at the workshop we were teaching this weekend. And it was like Michelle's the one who usually brings it. And so it's like, there's a moment of choice, and it would mm-hmm. be so easy for me to criticize her in that moment. Like, well, how could you forget that thing? Or, why didn't you put it in a better place? Right. Or, mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think many of us, what I'm glad of is that now I notice that impulse and I don't act on it. But many of us, right, those words just come out of our mouths.
Sort of a normal part of the day.
Yeah.
And I think also complaints can also are very, very often have either overt or covert criticism in them. Why didn't you buy the eggs last week? Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. gee, that you know, that, you know, that your part of the house is always messy, right?
Right, right. Why did you do that way? Why didn't you do that way? How could you have forgotten this? What were you thinking when you did that?
Right, right.
And yet, you know, so let's take this real life example. We have this little sweet little giraffe that we use as a talking stick at our communication workshops, because the giraffe is the land animal with the largest heart. And so we got to the workshop on Sunday, or Saturday, actually.
Saturday, right.
And I was like, oh, where's Geraldine, the giraffe?
And I'd forgotten it in our Airbnb. Just not put it. I'd set it aside, and then I forgot to put it back in the bag.
Yeah, yeah. And so what happened inside of you in that moment when you realized?
Well, I felt like, I wish I had remembered. But I'm... Even though, I mean, my habit has been self-blaming and also very self-critical, I'm not anymore. So I'm like, oh, I made a mistake. Oh, well, we'll have to do something else.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And what would have happened if I had blamed you? If I was like, oh my God, you forgot that?
I would have felt really bad. It would have really been, I would have felt bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And most of the time, these moments when, you know, for those of us for whom criticism arises frequently, most of the time, these are not life or death moments, right? It's not like, oh my God, we're skydiving and you forgot to put the parachute on. Of course, in that moment, criticism is not really going to help you. Might as well love each other in that last moment, right? But most of the time when criticism arises, it's not about something so major. And you know, so we have a choice in that moment to either criticize and blame or not to.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, yeah.
And the truth is, you know, in most couples, I think minor criticisms happen many times a day, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it depends on how many hours a day you interact.
Right.
If you have less time together, there may be a little less time for criticism.
Yeah.
But I know... Our mentors, Gay and Katie Hendricks, talk about being on the no blame, no criticism diet. And they like to say that not a single word of criticism has passed between them for many years. And usually when they say that, people are like stunned. So wherever you are on this trajectory, if you're somebody who, you know that words of criticism tend to happen frequently from your lips, you know, anything you can start to do to curb that habit will help. You know, cut it in half the first day, you know, half it again the second day. Getting to a no criticism diet for your relationship is one of the most powerful things that you can do to start getting the love and the trust back.
One of the things that's true about our brains is that they have what's called a negative bias. What that means is that things that are negative in some way or another have a much, much, much more powerful effect as things that are positive. In fact, it's 5 times more powerful. So every little, you know, I really appreciate you, you need 5 of those to counteract 1 critical statement.
And for many of us, the ratio is probably inverse, right? There might be like 5 little criticisms and then maybe 1 time when you remember to say thank you or say something appreciative. And when that's the case, it's the same as if, you know, every day you spent $5 and you put $1 in your bank account.
Right.
You know, pretty soon you have an overdrawn bank account. And that's what happens in our relationships with the sense of love and trust and good feeling, is that very often we are spending that much faster than we're replenishing it.
Exactly.
And so if you take 1 thing from this call tonight, we're going to go on and talk about some other things too. And we're going to talk about the specific intimacy building strategies. But if you only remember 1 thing, I would say to pay attention to criticism and blame.
Right.
And when that impulse arises in you, if it does, and equally true with self-criticism. So,
absolutely.
Right?
So, yes, equally true with self-criticism.
Yeah. When that impulse arises in you, know that you're not a bad person. It's normal. It's just about universal. Mm-hmm. But there is a better way than by speaking from criticism or blame.
Mm-hmm. And so the other common... A common intimacy killer is defensiveness.
We what do you mean by that? What are you suggesting? What are you implying?
Exactly. Right. And it's so natural. I mean, if we actually are being criticized, it's really natural, right? To just fire right back. But sometimes what happens is we perceive criticism or we hear criticism where it isn't actually there, and we speak defensively. And so that's a real problem. So defensiveness is something that is also something you should try to eliminate from your communication diet.
And this is challenging, right? Because it's natural, especially if you feel criticized or when you feel criticized, it's natural to defend yourself. It's kind of like you're falling and you're going to put your hands out to try to catch yourself with. And so learning how not to respond defensively to your partner or to the person you're in relationship with is really an art. And one of the things that it requires is for you to have a lot of self-love and self-compassion. And, if you've been following our work very much, you know that's one of Michelle's mm-hmm. biggest passions to mm-hmm. teach about is self-love and self-compassion, because they're so foundational, because it's really hard to do the intimacy building moves if you can't do them right. with yourself, within yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So right now, again, know that if you have a tendency to get defensive in your relationship, know that we're not saying you're bad. We're not saying you should just put up with someone's criticism or bad right. behavior. You shouldn't. You should get some help if that's what's going on in your relationship so that you can communicate better with each other. But when you get defensive, it does cause harm. You may just right. be defending in response to something else that's causing harm, but it will create another withdrawal from the bank account because, if actually, well, we're going to give a role play with an right. example of some of these things
yes.
in a minute, but
yes.
should we go through the rest of the intimacy killers first?
Yeah, and then
okay.
we'll role play. Yeah, yep. And so another one, the third horseman, is stonewalling. And stonewalling is when one partner just says, I'm not going to talk about it. And it could be that they choose not to talk about a particular topic. I'm not going to talk about this topic. Or they just stop talking. I was in a relationship where I had said something pretty innocuous. And we hadn't been dating for that long, just sort of early dating. And she stopped talking for like hours, and I eventually had to leave, and we weren't living together at the time. I left, and so she just stopped talking and didn't respond to me at all. And so that's another way of stonewalling. My experience of being a stonewaller was that it wasn't that I intended. I mean, sometimes stonewalling is purposeful, but sometimes it's not purposeful. Sometimes it's just people are just emotionally paralyzed and don't know what to say, can't say. I mean, that was where I was at. I couldn't say anything. I didn't know what to say or how to say it or how to deal with it or how to communicate. And so it was just like, I was paralyzed. And so that seems like stonewalling from the other person's perspective. And so learning how to tolerate our feelings so that we don't shut down and don't, freeze up and paralyze is an important piece of the puzzle.
And the expression stonewalling, a lot of us think of stonewall the bar, but stonewalling really means the feeling, if you're coming up against your partner, this person that you love, this person with whom you feel so vulnerable, and it feels like you're coming up against a stonewall. That's what it feels like on the other side of it.
Right, exactly.
And that is so painful. It's intolerable. And, part of what we teach is that it's really important to become able to tolerate your feelings. That's mm-hmm. part of becoming a catch in conscious girlfriend terminology. But the more that two people can come together and keep the lines of communication open, again, the less the intimacy will get damaged.
Right.
And as Michelle said, sometimes when someone seems like a stone wall, it's because they're so pissed off that they, sometimes we feel like withholding. We feel mm-hmm. like, screw you. You said these things or you did these things, see how you like it if I just stop mm-hmm. talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a, inner 3-year-old inside of most of us that is capable of going into that kind of tantrum place. Sometimes it feels justified, or it just feels like, you know, we can't think of what else to do. But there are other skills that you can learn so that you don't do that. Mm-hmm. And very often, as Michelle said, it's not coming from the tantrum place. It's just coming from a like, oh my God, I'm so freaked out. Right. I lose words.
Right.
And so what we suggest in those moments, if that's something that happens to you, is, or if you just, you know, you're really triggered, you know, it's not a wise time to speak, is to just practice finding enough words to tell your partner, you know what, I'm triggered. I need a timeout, you know, and then from knowing yourself, you can figure out, you know, whether you tend to need 15 minutes, an hour, 3 hours, a day, so that you can tell your partner, you know, I need X and such amount of time, and then I want to reengage. Right. Because then it won't be stonewalling. It's mm-hmm. what makes it feel like a stonewall on the other side is when it feels like the person's just gone, and then you don't know how to get them back.
Right. Right. Yep.
And then the last of the four horsemen is one that doesn't come up that often and tends to come up when couples are in real crisis, and that's contempt. And that's, you know, your partner comes home after a long day and they say, oh, it was a horrible day. And then you say, you know, it's like, just cry me a river. I mean, come on, you got to be kidding me. I mean, I had, your day was nothing compared to what I dealt with, right? That's a kind of expression of contempt, or I hate you when you do that, or I hate you like this, or mm-hmm, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Ridicule. You know, yeah. I think actually we're seeing a lot of contempt in the discussions about politics right now on right. both sides. There's a lot of contempt, mm-hmm. a lot of just like, how could you think that? How could you say right, that? How right. could you be so stupid? And that happens in close relationships too. Mm-hmm. And it is incredibly painful and damaging when we get to that point.
Yes.
Yeah. We have our cat jumping around here in case you see an orange tail waving.
Yes.
So. And then there's the last
one. Oh, right. The last one. Yeah. So, Every day during the day, our intimate partner, you know, sort of gives what we call a bid for connection. And that's just, you know, wanting to connect, wanting to reach out. And so another intimacy killer is when we turn away from that. When we, you know, one says, oh, you know, wow, this is so amazing, this thing that I just found. This is, oh, what's for dinner? You know, just a turning away and ignoring and not really kind of turning toward and saying, oh, wow, that's great. I want to hear about that.
Or, you know what happened at work today? Oh, I don't even want to hear about your day. You should hear what happened in my day.
Right.
You know,
yes.
And you know, some of the time we are too full up to be able mm-hmm. to listen. And this actually happened to me last night. You know, I was trying to post a comment on somebody's blog who had, you know, written a blog about our talk the other night, and I couldn't post the comment because it was requiring me to log in some way that I didn't know how to log in, and it wasn't taking my password and blah, blah, blah. And then Michelle said, you know, oh, let me show you how to do that. And I was like, oh, I can't even deal with that right now. And it was because I was actually, mm-hmm. I had also just been reading another email from somebody that was asking me to do something. And I didn't know how to do it. And I was like, just on overwhelm. Mm-hmm. And so some of that came out in response to Michelle, just trying to help me, mm-hmm. you know? And so then I caught myself and I said, I'm sorry. It, you know, it was just because I just read this other email that was, you know, sorry, you know, wasn't mm-hmm. you, mm-hmm. you know? And so in a moment like that, the minute that you become aware of something, you can repair it.
Right.
But if you don't repair it, and every time you don't repair it, it stays a turning away.
Yes.
And, you know, and it's even okay to say, you know what, honey, I really want to hear about your day, but I just don't have the space right now. You know, mm-hmm. I need to go do, you know, whatever. I need to go take a shower. I need to, you know, go do something else. Can we connect in an hour? Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
Like then it's not a turning away. Exactly. Then it's a turning toward.
Exactly.
Even if you don't have the space to have the conversation mm-hmm. right then. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But when you just, you know, act, I think when you just change the subject or don't listen, what most people will experience on the other side of that is the message, you're not important to me. And that's why it becomes an intimacy killer, right? Because the thing that, most of us want and need most in our relationships is that that's affirmation okay. right. that, mm-hmm. you know, that she cares.
Yeah. And that connection. You know, yeah. It's like, yeah, yes, yeah.
Yeah. So to just to review, the five intimacy killers that we covered so mm-hmm. far.
Criticism or blame, complaining, defensiveness, stonewalling, contempt, and turning away.
And we kind of stuck the complaints in there.
And yeah, and it's sort of into
kind of like criticism and yeah, blame. Yeah, 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 yeah. So it might sound like we named even more than five, but that's the basic
the
five.
The basic five, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So shall we do our
role play?
Role play, yes.
Okay. And so the thing about these intimacy killers, as probably most of you have experienced the hard way, I know I have, is that very quickly, the minute they start, they spiral. They're like rabbits on steroids, you know, or something. Like they reproduce so fast. And then they're bouncing back and forth between two people. And then, you know, it's like, you feel like she's lobbing grenades at you, and what many of us will do in response is lob another grenade back, and then, you know, then we've got, you know, grenades going back and forth. Or maybe you're like, I'm not going to lob a grenade. I'm just going to, you know, not say a thing, and then she experiences that as stonewalling, and then she's lobbing more grenades at that. You know, so it can go from zero to, you know,
85.
Right. In seconds, because our brains are so primed. Here's our cat again.
Don't want him to step on a key and disconnect us.
our brains are so primed to respond to our perception of danger.
Right.
And right. and so we were going to do our little role play. A few of you have seen us do this one before. It's from an actual scenario in our relationship that didn't go bad, but that could have.
Right.
And
right.
so we'll tell you what actually happened after we do the role play.
Yeah.
The bad role play.
Yeah. So the setup is that we were coming from separate places. I was from home. I was at home, and Ruth had been on a little personal retreat somewhere. We're coming to Berkeley to teach a workshop. Or Oakland, or wherever it was, and I had arrived a little bit early.
So we had a plan to meet at 3, and it was 2:40, and I was driving along the highway in traffic on my way to our destination, and Michelle had already arrived.
Right, and so I called and I said,
"We'll do that. We'll enact
okay.
it, right?"
Yes. Okay. Hey, love, where are you?
What do you mean, where am I?
Well, I'm just curious, wondering where you are.
Well, it's not time. It's only 2:40.
I know what time it is. I was just curious. I was wondering, you know, if you were in traffic or where you were. That's all.
It sounds like you don't trust me.
What do you mean I don't trust? I trust you. I was just curious. I trust you. Really?
I can't believe you would call me and ask me where I am.
Why are you getting so upset? Why are you getting so upset about this?
Well,
this is not a big deal.
Well, because I want there to be some trust in this relationship.
Forget it. I don't want to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about it anymore.
I can't believe you would just call and attack me and then refuse to talk about it. Okay, I can't even bear to go on with this anymore. It's too painful.
But you got the idea.
Right. So cancel. That is not what we recommend. And yes. That is not what actually happened,
right.
Thank God.
But
I hope that many of you who are witnessing that can recognize from that, you know, just a couple of moments, how bad things can get, how fast. And so I'm curious, I don't know, should we have people say in the chat if they recognize any
sure,
of the
Sure, yeah. You can say in the,
you
can type in the chat
we're doing.
Whether you recognize the behaviors we were doing. Yep.
Yeah, or if you have any comments. I can certainly see that I got in the role play, I got defensive right away, mm-hmm. right?
As did I, yes.
Right, yep. right. Yep. So we were both defensive.
Yeah.
Then I was accusatory. I accused mm-hmm. you of attacking me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
What else would you?
There was stonewalling, of course, because uh-huh. I right. stopped talking.
Right. Right.
right. Right.
And then I did something else, which we actually didn't name among the intimacy killers, but it certainly doesn't work well, which is I immediately generalized. So here mm-hmm. we are in this moment
right.
where she's calling me And I'm starting to say, I just want there to be some trust in the relationship.
Right.
Right. So I've gone into this huge place of baggage where we're no longer talking about, you know, what's happening in this moment. You know, so there's actually no effective way for Michelle to respond in that moment. Once I say, I just want there to be some trust in this relationship. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's nothing I can do. What can I do about that?
And, yeah, what can I can? Yeah. I, at that point, have clearly spiraled down into a place where I don't believe her good intentions. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming she's attacking me and criticizing me. I mean, it's like, so that's the example of going from 0 to 85.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And unfortunately, it can be all too familiar and too painful.
Mm-hmm.
So,
so
there's a couple of chats here. So somebody says, what do you do when someone is stonewalling you? Someone else is saying, seems that if trust is betrayed or not well established, any of these things can happen. And then someone else is saying, like, what do you say? Yeah, absolutely. These things do happen all the time. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're right. The person who's saying if trust is betrayed or not well established. And the problem is that the minute you have an interaction like this, you destroy any trust that is there.
Right.
You know, again, so it's like, you know, even if you've put a little money in the bank, you're making this huge withdrawal at that point. And so after just one interaction like that, if we really had one interaction like that, we would probably be wary and walking on eggshells with each other from then on. Mm-hmm.
Right.
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 Like just that in itself would destroy a lot of intimacy. And so sometimes, as you're saying, this happened because the intimacy has already suffered, but sometimes maybe it happens because we don't know other ways to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't even realize what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So let's do a different example. And we'll do this one with some asides, right? So not just talking between us, but I'll kind of turn back to you and tell you what's going on in my head. And maybe Michelle can do the same. Okay. So we'll start with the same
scenario.
Gotcha.
Okay. So I'm calling and I actually am literally just curious. Hey, love, where are you?
Oh my God, when she says that, I get scared because it's 2:40 and I'm stuck in traffic and I do tend to not always allow quite as much time as I should to get places on time. And I guess I did that today and I'm scared that maybe I will be a little late and maybe she'll get mad at me. And so all of this is going through my head. And then I'm catching myself and I'm remembering, oh, this actually isn't an attack because I know Michelle well enough to know she actually probably just wants to know where I am. So all this goes through my head. And then I say to her, oh, I'm stuck in a little bit of traffic. I'm on that part of 580 out by Livermore where the traffic gets really bad. I'm sorry, but I'll probably be there by 3 or close to then.
Mm-hmm. And of course, since she hasn't said anything, I mean, she hasn't said anything, you know, negative at all. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm sorry that you're in traffic. It's such a drag over there and I'll see you when you get here.
And then she's being so sweet that I actually can take even more responsibility and I can say, yeah, I should have left a little earlier. I'm sorry I didn't. Mm. How was your drive?
It was fine. It was painless. No traffic. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad your drive was smooth. Mm. Okay. Well, I'll see you soon, love.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, so that's what actually happened.
That's what actually happened.
And that can happen for you too. But what it takes is, you know, first of all, the willingness to interrupt your usual habits. If you have any of these intimacy killing habits, which I don't know anybody who doesn't.
Right.
But chances are you do,
because
they're so common. And so just noticing what's going through your head and being able to stop before it comes out as the defensiveness or the blame or the stonewalling can make all the difference. Now, we could also do a role play where it's reversed, because in this case, I'm the one that noticed in myself that I could have gotten a little bit defensive and I stopped it. But what if it was the other way around? What if you were mad at me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if you were frustrated?
Mm-hmm. And then I think in that case, I would like be, oh, wow, okay, what's happening? What's going on for me? And I mean, before I even spoke, right? What's going on for me? What's happening? How am I feeling? What is it about?
So let's try it. Let's try the role play where you do some asides, right?
Okay. So I'm sitting in my car, and it's early, but I'm an early person. I like to be early, and I realized that I'm wondering whether she's going to be late, and then I'm spinning out this, oh, she's going to be late, and then the people at the Airbnb are going to be mad at us because we got there late, and I'm going to feel sort of vulnerable about being late, and so then I'm like, okay, well, that's my feeling. It hasn't happened yet. She's, you know, it's still plenty of time. And, you know, then if I call, I can actually, I mean, it's interesting. I think if I had been in that place, I actually would not have said, where are you? I think I would have said, hey, how are you doing? And I just wanted to touch base. I wouldn't probably have not have said it that way.
Uh-huh.
Cause I was really literally just curious when I said that. But I think if I had been anxious, I probably would have realized that saying, where are you, might have had a charge, because it might have had a charge behind my voice because I was sort of anxious.
Right.
So I probably wouldn't have said, where are you?
So what if we do a role play where you start to go to a critical place and then you pull yourself back from that brink?
Okay. Hey, love. I wondered where you are.
Oh, I'm stuck in traffic, and I, you know, it's moving really slowly out here, but I'll probably be there by 3, or, you know, maybe I'll be 5 or 10 minutes late.
Well, I'm realizing now that I'm feeling a little anxious. I'm a little anxious right now. I'm sorry that I asked that question that way. I'm realizing now that I'm actually was feeling anxious and I was worried about the person at the Airbnb, and it's fine. It's just my own stuff, my own anxiousness.
Okay. She didn't do the role play I thought she was going to do. She just got way conscious, way fast.
Way conscious too fast.
But that's what you can do too.
Right.
So again, I mean, there are all kinds of brinks that she could have gone to. She could have started to criticize me. That's that's kind of what I was thinking you might do. Mm-hmm. Like, well, why didn't you leave on time?
Right.
You know, this has happened before. You're always late.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and so then let's say she did say some things like that. I would have a choice in that moment, right? I could either get defensive and say, well, yeah, but what about that other thing that you always do wrong?
Right.
Or I could say, you know what? You're right. I should have left a little earlier.
Mm-hmm. And that would have totally diffused it for me. I think that's the thing. I think when we can take responsibility, it definitely tends to diffuse the charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in answer to the question, what do you do when someone is stonewalling you? I think in that moment, you probably can't do anything that's going to be very constructive. I don't know whether you're talking about someone stonewalling you from the kind of punitive place, like, you know, you don't deserve for me to talk to you, or from the like freaked out, shut down place. But either way, she's triggered in that moment. And so you're not likely to be able to have a productive conversation. So what I would suggest that you do in that moment is just take some steps to recognize, okay, she is either not willing or not able to talk to me right now. I'm going to take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give myself some self-compassion. I'm going to go take a walk or go take a hot bath or go do something that is nurturing to me.
Right. And then at some point when neither of you is triggered, you can have a conversation about, you know, hey, you know, the other day when we were having that conversation and you stopped talking to me, you know, I felt, you know, sort of what the feelings were, and to try to talk about how you both can learn how to speak in ways that you both can hear each other.
I think what I would actually want to suggest doing in that situation, rather it depends on the how much trust there is currently in the relationship. But,
right.
But perhaps rather than saying, you know, when you did that the other day, this is how I felt, I might actually want to open it up into a bigger conversation. You know, like I'm feeling like I really want us to find some ways to communicate when things come up that really feel good for both of us. Is that an exploration that you're willing to engage in with me? You know, just making the most neutral invitation possible so that it doesn't read as a criticism. It's not like you did that thing wrong the other day and now there's hell to pay, you know, because if you make it sound that way, you're going to just start the cycle over again. But the truth is, I mean, we get in relationships because we love each other, right? You know, so when we're not feeling attacked, then there's room for us to come forward.
Right.
And many of us have triggers so that we will feel attacked very quickly, even if it's not happening. But also many of us have a tendency to attack. And so the more that you can create a space where it feels safe for both people to come forward. And, you know, and sometimes it's like the nuclear arms race, right? Like, I'm not going to lay down my nuclear arms till you lay down yours.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, we know where that gets us in a nuclear arms race.
Right.
It gets us the same place in a relationship.
Right.
Where it's like, I'm not going to behave responsibly till you behave responsibly first. You know, it's like, so the truth is, you know, I would say to empower yourself, any person, either person can start to break the cycle. If you change your dance moves, the dance will change. And sure, maybe you would wish that she would change her dance moves at the same time or even first. But by waiting for that to happen, you're giving up your power. So Abby is saying, you just like shut down bitch face type of thing. Is there a way to say, hey, love, do you want me to just give you some time? Whenever you want to talk, just let me know. That's nice. And even, I don't even think you have to say whenever you want to talk, just let me know. I mean, you could say, do you need a little time?
Yeah.
You know, when do you think you'd be ready?
Yeah. And I think it's
to reengage.
I think it's important, to, in the tone of the of that it's not do you want me to give you some time, you know, that it's really like, you know,
it's not like go to your room,
right? It's not like go to your room. Yeah, that it really is you know, with some gentleness and the problem of and compassion. And the problem, of course, is you might be in a place where you're triggered by her not speaking, and so in that situation you actually don't want to say anything. You don't want to say anything until you're not triggered anymore.
Yeah. One of the challenges, you know, we talk a lot and we won't talk in detail tonight about it, but one of the challenges with all of this is that usually what happens is we get triggered, which means our brain goes into fight or flight mode. And when that happens, the reptile primitive brain that is designed to keep us alive takes over, and then we can't think clearly. You know, all we can think about is, you know, this other person feels like my enemy.
Right.
And so when your brain is in that place, her brain is probably in that place too, because it's catching, you know, even before we consciously know it, our brain sense, you know, oh, the other person's in that place. And then that feels scary and threatening. Yeah. So then we're in that place.
Right.
And when you're triggered, even if you're trying really hard to get the right words out of your mouth, the other person is going to read the energy behind it and still stay triggered. And that's why taking time out and doing untriggering processes like the SCORE process, which we're not going to teach tonight, is so key. Because when you're triggered, but you're trying to like, I'm going to speak civilly even though I'm seething, you know,
it doesn't work.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then someone asked, how do I learn to catch myself without losing spontaneity? And really, that's about practice. That's really about learning how to know your emotions, learning how to know what your triggers are, learning how to know what your habitual responses are, and just practicing interrupting them.
Mm-hmm. And so. I think also some kinds of spontaneity are really valuable and life-giving. And when trust is flowing and things are feeling good, it's a wonderful spontaneity, mm-hmm. you know, like maybe you're going to just like pick a flower and put it behind her ear or, you know, like mm-hmm. some other right. spontaneous right. thing that's going to be really lovely. But spontaneous anger
right.
is, you know, or spontaneous defensiveness or spontaneous criticism. I would say that's more impulsive than spontaneous,
right.
really.
Right. Yes.
And
yes.
it does a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. So I think that there is a way to become self-observant enough that you're. I mean, I see your point. Maybe there is a tiny interruption of spontaneity when you're kind of watching yourself, and just kind of checking out. You know, like. Hey, I'm about to say something. Am I saying it from a clear mm-hmm. place? But the more of a habit it gets to be, the less it will feel like it
yes,
interrupts
exactly.
spontaneity, because you'll know when it feels like everything is free and clear in your body, mm-hmm. you know, that you don't have to be quite as mindful. Although, mm-hmm. I mean, actually, because things can turn on a dime, mm-hmm. Having that, you know, that just kind of compassionate witnessing brain all mm-hmm. the time, mm-hmm. I think is really important. And I don't know. It's an interesting question. Do you think it interrupts spontaneity?
Well, the truth of the matter is that, just like you're saying, you know, spontaneous anger, spontaneous reactions out of triggers are damaging. And so you don't want that kind of spontaneity at all. And so I think that the lack of that kind of spontaneity is not going to be a problem. And I think, you know, I was just thinking about this earlier about learning how to handle triggers. It's like at this point with our own practice, we know how to handle triggers, I mean, really quickly. And so I think that that actually can then bring the return to spontaneity.
Right. Right.
You know,
it actually lets the positive spontaneity
right.
keep flowing.
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
I think that we don't feel like we're walking on eggshells with each other really ever.
Yeah,
right?
Ever at all.
Right.
Right.
Like we really have, because I think we don't keep withdrawing from that bank account. So we really
right.
do have more of that flow.
Yes. Yeah.
So before we go too much further in answering questions, I just want to make sure that we tell you about the class that we promised
yes.
to tell you about
yes.
tonight.
Yeah. So the alternative to all of these, problematic, you know, the horsemen in the apocalypse, are some very specific skills that you can learn that are not hard to learn and that just take some practice and some time. There is clean speech, that's speaking without criticism or blame or defensiveness, without stonewalling. Clean listening, which is making sure that you're actually not hearing criticism where there isn't. That you're really able to really hear things in a way that, oh, that's actually what was said and not that you think there's something behind it. Not talking while you're triggered, and being able to dismantle your triggers and handle your triggers. And then also giving appreciations and other specific intimacy building behaviors and communication.
Yeah. Appreciations are a way of putting money, you know, putting intimacy
right.
currency
yes.
back in the relationship bank account.
Right.
But if you're doing the intimacy killing behaviors and then just like pasting some appreciations
right.
on top,
yep.
it's not going to work.
No.
So I think the ideal scenario is first you interrupt all of the intimacy killers. And then as part of the trust rebuilding, you also say, wow, thank you so much for mm-hmm. cooking dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really appreciate you doing the dishes,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Michelle forgot the little giraffe, but it's like, mm-hmm. thank you so much for bringing all the markers and for mm-hmm. doing all the kind of scut work for all the classes. You're mm-hmm. always the one that's remembering all the little
Aww.
Things. I really appreciate that.
Aww.
Like, it's funny, even now as I'm saying this, you know, she's mm-hmm. she's softening, you know, and like we don't have tension between us, but I could just feel her melting mm-hmm. a little bit,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, it's like,
People really
love
yeah.
to get appreciated.
We
need it.
And it really continues to build and strengthen our connection.
So back to the class. We need to talk about
the class. Yes. and so in this class, what you'll learn is those things. You will learn the alternatives to these horsemen. And you learn the foundations for that, which include self-love and self-compassion, which include emotional awareness so that you know what you're feeling when you feel it. And then you're able to express your feelings in self-responsible ways. And there's some stuff about really being able to dismantle your triggers and then to build intimacy.
And it's a 6-week class. It's called the Couples Communication Toolkit. And the subheading is Stop Fighting and Get the Love Back.
And one of the reasons why I developed this class and we did is that I do work with a lot of couples with coaching. And that's a pretty expensive process. And I realize that a lot of couples just simply can't afford it. And so we wanted to set up a course that couples could actually afford pretty easily. And so that's why we have this course.
And, you know, expense is all relative. And actually, I think that working with Michelle for couples is a way faster and more economical process than most couples counseling.
Yes.
A lot of couples counseling and some couples counseling is wonderful and useful. So I do not at all mean to criticize it, you know, in bulk. But I know my own experience in the past was that a lot of couples counseling spent a lot of time on my feelings and why was I feeling them, her feelings and why was she feeling them. And we didn't, not with Michelle, but with other partners, and we didn't get tools. And so we could go round and round about the feelings. And a lot of times we left feeling less connected than we came in even,
right.
You know, all stirred up without any real tools to deal with it. And so, you know, I've observed that oftentimes couples feel fairly despairing. It's like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, we should go to couples counseling,
right.
But it just feels like it's going to be a lot of time,
right.
A lot of money, a lot of pain, and you're not at all sure you're going to get something from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so compared to that, I would say investing in, you know, 8 to 12 coaching sessions with Michelle is way, way more targeted and skills-based, and you will come out of every session with some specific homework and practices. But 8 to 12 one-on-one sessions or two-on-one sessions is, of course, going to cost more than a self-paced class. And that's why we developed, or why Michelle developed, mm-hmm. The Couples Communication Toolkit. So it's a 6-week class that comes with weekly lessons. It's written and video, right?
It's audio and video.
Audio and video.
Audio and worksheets.
Right.
Mostly audio and worksheets.
So written and audio.
Right.
Each week for 6 weeks, you get access to those mm-hmm. materials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's also a bonus module on building intimacy. So there's a bonus week there. So it's really seven modules.
And if you can, if you are in a relationship, the ideal thing is for both of you to participate and take the class together.
Yes.
Obviously, you know, that's how you will get the most mileage. But sometimes we hear from people that are like, I know we have a problem, but she's not willing to work on it.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case for you, absolutely taking the class on your own will still make a huge difference. Because
right.
like I said earlier, if you change your dance steps, the mm-hmm. dance changes.
Mm-hmm.
If you stop getting defensive, it shuts down that dynamic. If
right.
you stop criticizing, it shuts down that dynamic. So the class comes in various different options, depending on if you
right.
want to completely do it yourself or if you want to do the class on your own or with your partner, and then get some coaching to help you really apply it fully to your situation and your conflicts.
Right. So the do-it-yourself version is just $200 for that pretty substantial course, a really special course. You can also add 2 coaching sessions or 4 coaching sessions. For, you know, 2 coaching sessions is $400 total, and adding 4 coaching sessions is $600 total. So it's a really economical package.
And so the class is available. You can sign up for it at consciousgirlfriend.com/toolkit.
And I just put that in the chat.
Yeah, yeah. So, and we really, it is a self-paced class. So for those who are familiar with our roadmap class where we come together with group coaching on certain days and times. That does not happen in the toolkit class.
You can start it whenever you're ready. And it's actually, it's designed to be week by week, but all the modules are there and you can pace it. You know, you can do one module every other week, or if you really want to do it intensively, I wouldn't do it too much more often than once a week, because it's a lot of material. So, but you can extend it out if you need to.
So feel free to ask us more questions about the toolkit class, or just go to the information page, consciousgirlfriend.com/toolkit, and check it out. And then meanwhile, we'll just keep answering your questions tonight.
Yeah, we'll happy to take questions on anything.
And there's one question already in the chat. Is there a way to connect feelings with need to be more wary? And I'm not sure what you mean by be more wary, but I'm thinking maybe what you mean is be more, what we would call to be more mindful, like just being more self-aware, like sort of watching yourself. Mm-hmm.
I mean, one thing that, you know, that we talk about is noticing the body sensations of the feelings. Because when we feel an emotion, our bodies generally respond in some way. You know, we'll feel a lump in our throat if we're sad, or we'll feel tension in our jaw if we're angry, or we'll feel a punch in the gut if we're afraid. And so being in touch with our body sensations. And sort of one thing that I've suggested for people who maybe aren't that familiar with how their body responds to emotions is to do periodic body scans. It's like, okay, well, what's happening in my body? What am I feeling? Oh, wow, I feel a shoulder. What's going on? This thing this guy just said to me, I really got angry about that. You know, to just sort of be able to connect the things that happen in our lives with what's happening in our body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And going back to that horrible drive cross country that I was talking about earlier, where my girlfriend and I got so disconnected and it was so painful, you know, if I had the skills in this toolkit, if I could have just sat there in the car next to her and connected to myself with compassion and just let myself feel my own feelings within myself and get untriggered, and then I could have looked with more curiosity at what was actually going on with my girlfriend, rather than taking it so personally and getting in such a desperate place of trying to pull her back close to me. It could have made a huge difference, you know? I mean, and ideally, if I could have done that, you know, in the first few minutes, then we would have never even had the big problem. But even if I could have done that after an hour, even if I could have done that after a few hours, even if I could have done it the next day and then acknowledged to her, oh, wow, I see I was getting really triggered and I was really pulling on you and not giving you the space you needed to just have your feelings about your family visit. I'm sorry. You know, it would have changed everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing to me to think about how in the dark I was. Believe me, I could tell you a lot of other stories, but I won't take the time to do that. But how in the dark I was and how much damage I kept unintentionally causing, not just in that relationship, but in other relationships. And the skills that we're teaching in this toolkit, when you integrate them, they will literally stop those fights and those disconnections in their tracks.
Yep.
Like once you're using these skills, and it does take a while to really learn them, and it does require you to really commit yourself to them, but they will change the entire, you know, the entire cascade.
You can have a relationship that's easy, that doesn't require a lot of work, where there's a lot of connection and ease and trust, and that you don't get into fights, and you don't have these, you don't feel like you're walking on eggshells, and you really can feel like, oh yeah, you know, I'm connected to this person and I really feel great when I'm around this person and there isn't any built up stuff.
Yeah. And then you can spend your time, you know, having fun things or, you know, working together to bring positive things into the world, you know, and there's a lot of need for that right now.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't have to be going down those spirals, those drains of difficult communication. So we are open for questions now, and somebody else just posted a question in the chat. We're happy to have questions in the chat, but we also invite those of you that would like to use your voices. We always love to hear women's voices on these calls. So if you're on the computer, you can mm-hmm. unmute yourself with the little icon on the left-hand corner of the image that you're seeing of yourself. And if you're on the phone, you push *6 for us to be able to hear you, to unmute yourself.
So the question is, what can you do if your forgetfulness hurts your partner? It's not purposeful, but forgetting the little things adds up, and I'd like some tools for this issue.
That's a great question, and I appreciate your self-responsibility yeah. in asking that question.
Yes, it's great. And the answer is?
What is the answer?
Well, there's actually not much you can do. Because it's actually your partner's. That one of the things that's a challenge about this work in a way is that, the great thing is that we have so much power, right, in changing our own sort of our own responses, our reactions. But the flip side of it is we have very little power in changing our partner.
Well, I would say there's a few things you can do.
Okay.
Because I'll speak from personal experience here. There are certain things about which Michelle is very forgetful.
And yes, that's true.
And certain conversations that we've had over and over again. And I find, like about when I'm sick, remember?
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she was looking surprised for a minute. One of the things, it took us a while to learn, but finally we figured out, I can't even remember who came up with it, but that, I could make a specific request that when I'm sick, if she could just remember to say, is there anything I can help you with, mm-hmm. Or is there anything mm-hmm. you need?
Right.
And so she doesn't have to remember a whole bunch of things. She doesn't have to remember a long list of all the things that I might want. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even if she forgets to ask if there's something that I need, since we've established that that's something that really helps me, mm-hmm. I could actually remind her if I'm not taking her forgetfulness mm-hmm. personally.
But you're you and not me.
I am. So what if you're you?
So if I'm me, I mean, I guess what I could say is I could say, wow, I realize that I keep forgetting this stuff and I don't want to forget these things. And so is there anything that I can do that would help, any way we can figure out that you can help me remember? So that's one thing we could as the forgetful person.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as the forgetful person, anything you can do to take responsibility with your partner, just like you did on this call, and say, you know what, I know this is a habit of mine. I know it plays out in ways that feel bad to you. I really want to change that. But the more that you can get on the same page as a couple, so it's like rather than it's you and her pitted against each other,
right.
It's like how can we strategize as a couple? Like, yes, I have this weakness, I'm forgetful, undoubtedly mm-hmm. she has some weaknesses too, because mm-hmm. that's how it works. Mm-hmm. We all have weaknesses, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And when you can acknowledge your weakness and say, okay, so what are we going to do when right. this weakness of mine comes back up?
Right.
Because
it's going to happen.
Some of our weaknesses do appear repeatedly, mm-hmm. even though you love her, mm-hmm. Despite your best intentions. And so I think that's the place that we got to.
Yes.
And so now maybe when I'm sick and miserable and wanting Michelle's support, I can remember to say, remember, you're supposed to say, is there anything you need?
Right.
And even if I'm feeding her her line, It's almost like it's become a joke between us, mm-hmm. Because I'm not taking mm-hmm. it so personally anymore. Mm-hmm. And now you can't get your partner to that point. Only she can get herself to that point. But the more that you can treat the issue lightly, take mm-hmm. responsibility and treat it lightly and say, how can we strategize as a couple
right.
about it?
Yep.
I think that's mostly what you can do on your end mm-hmm. to try to diffuse.
And there's a follow-up question. Do you get tired of asking?
Uh-huh. I do. I do sometimes. I certainly have had that wish. Like, I wish I didn't have to ask. Mm-hmm. I wish she would just remember. But I think what also helps me is also to remember that there are a million things that Michelle does, or many, many, many things that she does that I wouldn't have even thought to ask for. You know, like every time I have some little technical thing, like I can't work my phone or my zipper is stuck in my backpack or whatever, like I can bring that to her and she fixes it for me, you know? So it's like part of what I've also had to do is refocus myself on all of the positive, loving things that she does in her own way. Even if she doesn't always do, you know, the things that I would do. Yeah. So it's just, it's a two-way street, you know, like hopefully she'll do some work on that place where she gets so hurt and upset and, and stop taking it so personally, and become more able to appreciate the things that you do do, you know, and maybe as that climate eases, and you feel less on the defensive, maybe you'll actually get less forgetful too. It could happen, you know. Or maybe you'll like remember to put some little post-it notes somewhere or I don't know, the tech equivalent of that, whatever your whatever your method is. I mean, we're, you know, we're human and fallible, and that's that's what this whole business of having relationships is. You know, it's like two human, fallible, imperfect people, you know, showing up in our vulnerability. You know, that's that's how it works.
So, Abby, you wanted to
ask a question.
So, go ahead. Yes, go ahead, Abby. Oh, oops. We're dueling. Go ahead.
There you are.
Hey. Okay. So, actually, it was like right before you said that we could talk out loud, I like wrote some of it down. I'm sorry, this is kind of a long question, but it's, okay. So, I'll read it and then I'll just like explain. Okay. For the last 6 months, I was pretty seriously involved with a really wonderful woman who has some very addictive tendencies. Due to the fact that she has been a victim of a lot of domestic violence in her life, both in her family and in a lesbian relationship, she behaves recklessly in lots of ways, including abusing alcohol. She's been in and out of rehab for a long time and has gone to court-mandated rehab. In handcuffs. A couple of months ago, I suggested to her that we slow down our relationship a bit and even see other people, kind of regroup and go slow. I wanted us to be romantic and court each other. We had started our relationship very quickly, and I also wanted to give her a chance to start therapy and kind of get her shit together, though I didn't make that explicit. This suggestion that we see other people totally crushed her, and she broke up with me about a month ago, which really broke my heart. Since then, she has changed her mind many times, and that's where I stopped writing, so I'll just explain. She's, it's basically been, it's just been really difficult because she will, like, she just changes her mind all the time. Like, she'll tell, so she told me that it was over, and then she will be, like, very loving towards me, and then I will be like, I know that I can, I want to be with you. I want to take care of you. Like, I want to be there for you and help you. But then she'll tell me that she doesn't want to do that to me. And it's just like, it's over. And then when but she still wants to talk. And then when I finally like was like, listen, if you're not going to be with me, I need to cut ties with you. This is very painful. She really freaked out and very emotionally unsafe. And really like, she really, it was really scary. And then like, I don't know, since then, she asked me to go to an AA meeting with her. Just been off and on, and basically, I stopped responding to her text messages about a week ago, but, like, I just am so in love with this person, and I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know if I can hope that we can be together in the future, or she said that she's gonna, like, I think she's gonna go to AA and start therapy and stuff. My sense is that I just need to, like, leave the picture and maybe try to talk to her again in a year and see if she's better. But I'm just really struggling and very, very heartbroken right now.
Well, my heart goes out to you, Abby. You know, just, I mean, that is a really, really hard situation. And I also think that you gave yourself some wise counsel there. Because the truth is to be able to show up and have a healthy relationship, both people need to have a degree of internal stability and resilience to be able to handle those waves of emotion. I mean, relationships bring up really strong waves of emotion. And we can learn to, you know, sort of surf them or body surf them, like in the ocean, you know, when the really big wave comes and you duck underneath. When we talk about catch skills, I don't know if you've seen some of our other material about that, but one of the key skills in being able to have a healthy relationship is being able to tolerate your feelings without blowing up, shutting down, or self-medicating. And people need to be able to do that in a healthy relationship. And most of us, none of us were born being able to do that, you know, like in fact, we were born the opposite, right? We had to be able to like wail at the top of our lungs when we had feelings so that hopefully somebody would come take care of us. So this is really a skill that takes developing. And, you know, I hope that the woman that you're talking about will really keep working in recovery and in healing to heal that trauma and get there. But it sounds like you're pretty clear that she's not there now. And
so, well, she just keeps shutting, like she just like shuts me out. And then when I when I accept it, she'll reach out again and say she misses me.
So you've got a real push pull.
It's really tough.
It's really hard.
Well, I really hear your love and your care for her, and I also hear your love and your care for yourself, you know. And so, like I said, it sounds like you can see the wise course of action in this, and I would echo what you said, you know, what you said for yourself. Because when someone's not there, they're not there. And, you know, I mean, you could decide to try to make a go of it and do, you know, in that case, I would say get some coaching, get some intensive help. But it sounds like she really has a bunch of healing she needs to do on her own first before she's really able to handle the emotions in a relationship. Now, it also sounds like you may have some work to do in terms of being able to really communicate clearly, because I can actually see why she got really triggered when you said maybe we should see other people. You know, it's easy to see how somebody would hear that as a rejection.
Hey, that relationship.
Even though, you know, that's not how you were feeling it. So, you know, I would say the couples communication toolkit or some of the other stuff we offer will also be helpful to you. For the future, for other relationships. And it sounds like this one right now, she needs to do some more healing first would be, you know, I'd echo your own wisdom on that.
Okay. So like, do you think that maybe like how long of time should go by before I reach out to her? Do I just like never reach out to her again? Or like, what do you guys think?
It's so hard to know. I mean, it's so hard to know. She could, you know, she could be in recovery for 6 months and then she could relapse. I mean, it's impossible to know. I think you can check back with her and just see how she's doing.
How she's doing.
You know,
I mean, you could say, I would love for us to check back together in about a year and just see where we are then. But, you know, she may not want to do that. She may not be able to do that. She may be too hurt by that point. You may not want to do that in a year. You know, you can't actually say from here either.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And meanwhile, wishing you lots of healing. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's really painful.
Yeah. Thanks so much. It's really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're welcome. Okay. Other questions? Other people who want to unmute themselves on the computer or *6 to unmute yourself on the phone, or you can type a question in the chat.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Monica. I really resonated with the last caller. I come from a very toxic family growing up, very toxic childhood, but I've been in and out of counseling all my life, and I've gone through the alphabet soup of the 12-step groups, like especially Al-Anon and Codependent Anonymous. Mm-hmm. I made a lot of progress when I got away from my family. I lived in Florida for 35 years, and then at age 30, I was living on my own. And then I lived in Brooklyn for 10 years. After that, did very well. The last 5 years, I've moved back to Dutchess County in upstate New York, where my family's located, and I've gone backwards, just gone totally. Like everything I grew and learned, and all that counseling, all that 12-step work, is like gone backwards. Like I don't smoke, drink, or drug, but it's just like they have not grown at all. They're into their illness in a really big way. I had only one healthy relationship in my life for 10 years, and it was a beautiful relationship, a very understanding, supportive woman. And I wonder if I'll ever find love like that again. And I'll just say one last thing. I'm hoping that you guys offer that self-esteem class, because my self-esteem is really being battered right now. I live in a place that's unfriendly. I live in an apartment complex that's meant for seniors who are angry and bitter. They're looking back at the end. They're at the end of their lives. They're looking back at their lives, and they have a world of regrets. I'm younger. I'm 58, and so like the average age of my building is like 75. Mm-hmm. And so many good things about it, but I never saw so many angry, bitter people in my life. And I'm trying to get on get away from my family and get in a healthier environment that's LGBT friendlier.
Uh-huh.
So I'm looking at a couple of places, mm-hmm. but it's very hard to move out of public housing into another public housing because of the homeless problem in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got a terrible homeless problem. And of course, people that are street homeless need to come first,
mm-hmm.
you know, be on to the head of the line. And I don't know if you want to comment on that, but thank you so much for the work you do.
Sure.
If you could have your self-esteem class next year, I would, early next year, I would love to sign up for it.
Actually, Monica, you can take the self-love class whenever you want to. It's a self-paced class like this class. It's not time.
Like the toolkit class.
Like the toolkit class. It's not time sensitive. And if you just go to consciousgirlfriend.com/love-yourself-first. You'll see the class, and you can, it's a 4-week class, just deep dive into self-compassion and self-love. You can take it anytime.
And I think, Monica, that you also offered the answer to your own question just the way Abby did. I've heard you talk before about really needing to move, and it sounds like you feel like you were more able to keep up, the different way of being when you were not living so close to your family. And I know you're not happy where you are. And so I just, I believe you are a really powerful person. And I believe if you set your mind to it, you will make it happen. I know it's difficult, but I believe you will make it happen. Now, meanwhile, even though it's challenging and you feel like you're surrounded by angry, bitter people, you still can work to change your dance step. I mean, I know it's tough and it's not where you want to be, but I would say, and you're probably already doing this, but I would say, if you use some of these same tools we've been talking about and give people appreciations and smile at them, there may be some that stay just as angry and bitter, but eventually it will kind of seep its way in. It's a hard road if it's not where you're happy. I would say that there's always some possibility for doing that.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing that, Monica.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Jocelyn is asking, do couples receive feedback in the online couples class?
So the just DIY version, there's no feedback, but if you add two or four coaching sessions to that, then you can get feedback on what's happening and get your questions answered and get specific support for your particular issues.
And I think if there's any way for you to swing it, we would highly recommend that you get one of the options of the class that has either the two or the four coaching sessions, because it does really help to have somebody else there to help you put the finger on your own patterns and how they're playing out and apply the skills directly to your situation. I think what the 6 week class will do is save you at least six couple sessions,
right?
If not more, because you'll have all the material right there, and you can save a lot of time. You know, you can mm-hmm. work with it on your own time, and then just come to Michelle. You know, already like mm-hmm. caught up to speed,
primed, right? Yes.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, and ready to apply the material, so she doesn't have to teach you all of that stuff individually. So I think that's the optimal use, but if you can't afford any coaching with the class, you can just do the class. You know, if you're motivated, it can still make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm, right.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Other last questions. Well, we'll see if anybody asks a question.
Courtney.
I've got one. Hi. This is just thinking back to a relationship that's many years old, but it was a place I got stuck with this person. And what was happening was she had a way of saying fairly often, you need to do this or you need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would totally cop to being very sensitive to what I see as bossiness in other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious what a non-triggered response would be
uh-huh.
to somebody who is doing that repeatedly. And the second part of my question is, if you use your non-triggered response and they continue with the behavior,
mm-hmm.
then what do you do?
Why don't we
let's do a role play.
Yes, yeah. Which role do you want to be?
I'll be the bossy one.
Okay.
So, oh hey Ruth, I really want you to put away the dishes. Can you do that, please?
No, you need to say you need to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
you need
the
to. Oh, right. You need to put away. Yeah. They're building up.
Okay, so I'm gonna have my little triggered response now. I can see why you would, Courtney, and then another time, I'm going to come back to her, like maybe the next day, and say, you know what? I love you so much, Michelle, and I really want our relationship to be strong, and I know you want that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And you know, I've been thinking about our communication, and I realized that you have a habit, you might not even be that aware of it, of saying, like, you need to. When there's something that you want me to do.
Uh-huh.
And I realized it would be really helpful to me if you could kind of frame it as a request, like that would really help me to hear it in those mm-hmm. moments. Like mm-hmm. instead of saying you need to put the dishes away, if mm-hmm. you could say, hey, Ruth, could you put the dishes away?
Mm-hmm.
Is that mm-hmm. something that you would be willing to do?
Yeah, I'd be willing to do that. Sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, sure.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. Great. So then I've gotten her agreement, and maybe she'll forget. We were talking about forgetfulness earlier, right? Maybe she'll go back to the habit and say you need to. And then if I can, you know, maybe I'll get a little triggered next time, because now less triggered because we've talked about it, ideally. I could get more triggered, but ideally I'll get less triggered. And I'll say, hey, you know, remember we had that conversation? And if I do get too triggered to be able to say that when she says it, then maybe I'll bring it up the mm-hmm. next day. And I think ideally, eventually, it could become almost like a joke between us. Like,
right.
like if we really can be on the same page where she's not attached to saying things that way, she's just forgetful, and you know, we've talked about it. I know we're on the same page. You know, we could almost have like a code word, mm-hmm. you know, like whenever she says it, I'll say pineapple,
right?
You know, or something like uh-huh. that,
right,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that mm-hmm. that's the biggest key mm-hmm. is if you can avoid the you did that, but mm-hmm. you did that, but you did that, or the sort of mm-hmm. power struggle, mm-hmm. who's more right, you know, mm-hmm. and get to like, oh, this is something we're confronting together as a couple that we both want yeah. to have be different.
And that can be true for any pattern that you have as a couple. And I think if you both are really, you know, committed to doing this consciously and to having conscious communication, you can have those conversations and say, hey, you know, we really want to, let's change this and let's figure out a code word that we'll use. Could be like when you're getting into an argument, you can say, you really want to stop that. Let's have a code word. Oh, you know, we need to slow down. We need to score, whatever. I mean, just sort of, you can come up with these mechanisms because you're both on the same page.
I like the idea of saying ice cream sundae.
Yeah. Okay. That's good.
Banana split.
Banana split. Yeah.
Inject
yeah.
some lemon.
Chocolate. Dark chocolate.
But so just to break down a little bit what I was trying to do in the role play, was, you know, first of all, I was coming to her at a moment when I wasn't triggered. I was establishing we're on the same page here. Like, I want us to have a good relationship, good communication. I know you do too. Right. And then she affirmed that, yes, she did. So it's like we're already on the same mm-hmm. page, as opposed to if I had said, you know, Michelle, I want to talk to you about something.
Right. Right.
And most yes. people, if you said it that way, where
like
are they going to go?
Like, instant right. defensiveness.
Right. Instant fear. Right. Right. You know, or even if you said, you know, Michelle, you've been doing something that's been bothering me.
Right. Yes.
Right. Again, you're going to go to instant defensiveness. So mm-hmm. if you can, you know, approach with the going toward, we mm-hmm. both want to have a good relationship, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I suppose if she were really defensive, she might be one like, yeah, well, what, you know, what do you mean?
Right.
But hopefully not. And, you know, and then again, in my next sentence, I said, you know, there's something that you're doing. You might not even be aware of it. So I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt. Again, I'm really trying to be clear. This is not a criticism. Mm-hmm. I'm not telling you you're wrong.
Right.
And then I said, and it would really help me if you would be willing to do it this other way. You know, do you think you would be mm-hmm, willing?
Right.
Those are all
that's
examples.
So much better than what I said.
Well, that's why you're in conscious girlfriend now.
That's right. I would say, I don't feel need to do that, but it seems so important to you. Maybe you need to do it.
Ooh.
Oh.
And that's like, you know, eh.
Yeah.
That, not helpful. But fortunately,
those are fighting words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. And it's so easy. It's so easy to respond mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. that place.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then start volleying back mm-hmm. and forth mm-hmm. from that place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Or it was a way of trying to have a boundary with her, but not a useful way at all.
Right.
Know? Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it really, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, it's really an adult skill. And I mean this, you know, it's like a kind of adult that most of us are going to be spending this whole lifetime, if not more lifetimes, mm-hmm. trying to become. Mm-hmm. It's not a skill that mm-hmm. we automatically get just as the years go by.
Right.
You know, because I think, you know, if something hurts, the primal response is to say, ouch, you know,
yeah.
and, you know, and then sometimes like, you know, poke back at whatever mm-hmm. hurt. So it's mm-hmm. so common, it's so human, but it isn't what works the best,
right,
for building intimacy.
Yeah.
So
we have a question.
One more question, I yeah. think. That might be our last question.
So I think some of what goes on between us are some of the five languages of love issues. Like, one doesn't express love the way the other needs it to be expressed. Does the class deal with this at all? So we don't explicitly talk about the five love languages. That's a very, I mean, we often talk about it in various workshops
in coaching,
and stuff, but
yeah.
and in coaching quite a bit, but the course itself doesn't deal with it. But it gets at some of the same issues in a different direction. I think sometimes what happens with those kinds of things is that we attach meaning
to the way that, our partner speaks or doesn't speak to us. So our partner speaks a certain way, we attach meaning to that. So, oh, that means she doesn't care about me, or she's not listening to me, or she, you know, that kind of thing. And it's that story that we do that we need to interrupt, and that is in the course.
Yeah, the five love languages, for anybody who hasn't heard of it, it's a book that has become incredibly popular because what this guy did was just identify that there are different ways that each of us tends to feel most appreciated. Some of us really want quality time. Some of us really want touch. Some of us really want gifts. Some of us really want somebody to do special little things for mm-hmm. us. And there's one more. What am I forgetting?
Words of
affirmation. Oh, some of us really want words of affirmation.
Right.
Like, you know, you did such a great job with that. And I think that when you learn the skills that we talk about in the toolkit, if there's something specific that you want from the love languages or from something else, then you will have the skills to ask for
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
You know, right. So you'll have the skills to say, you know what? It would really make me feel so good if you could do blah, 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 you know, mm-hmm. whether it's rub my feet at the end of the day or, you right. know, would you be willing to do that?
Right.
And if you can, you know, stop the intimacy killers, which is where so many couples need to start. So stop the intimacy killers. Then you can get to, well, how are we going to grow the intimacy?
Right.
And then you can have a conversation that includes those five love languages. It's like, mm-hmm. wow, I really feel great when you do this for me. What are your favorite things to have me do for you?
Right.
You know, yes. So there's definitely room to incorporate the five love languages. But I would say that what we're dealing with in the couples communication toolkit is kind of the underpinnings that come even before that.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
So, so it was so nice to be with all of you tonight and hear your questions, and thank you so much for sharing all that you shared.
Yeah. And this is an especially tough time, I know, for me and for many of us, given what is happening in the world, and, you know, really tough time. And so I especially appreciate the chance to get to come together mm-hmm. as a community tonight and talk about, you know, constructive things and skill yes. building and yes. how to love each other better and how to yep. love ourselves better.
Yeah.
So thank you all for being part of that.
And if you have any further questions about the class, you can just email us at love@consciousgirlfriend.com.
And once again, the way to access the new course, the Couples Communication Toolkit, is at consciousgirlfriend.com/toolkit. And we'll also be sending out an email with that link, of right. course.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.
And lots of love to you
lots
all.
Lots of love, and good night to you all.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you.